And we're back with another week of the Geek Whisperers. I'm John Mark Troyer.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm Matt Brender.
And this week we're talking about expectations of corporate employees in a social age. That title, folks, that presupposes a couple things. One, what the hell is social age? We are in a social age. I don't even like social media. So, Amy, you want to explain us that?
I'm going to Amy-splain it.
Yeah.
I think of the social age as we really have moved past a time where social media was completely shunted off to the side. And now a lot of the corporate types have gone the other direction. And not only is it embracing it, it's that everybody must, should, would do that, and how to get to that place for everybody to be fully socially weaponized as fast as possible.
They somehow feel like it's kind of magic.
Yes.
I feel like a little bit like it's 1999 and everybody needed a web strategy. They didn't know what they needed or why, but they needed a web strategy.
You need some SEO up in there.
That might have even been a few years later. So yeah, I agree. At VMware at one point, I think the chief marketing officer said that all marketing plans must include a social component and it must be one of the primary components, which, you know, I'm soaking in it, right? I'm not sure I believe that every single marketing program has to be social.
Well, yeah, but I like the culture shift, right? So not too terribly long ago, people were not exactly thinking that they were even allowed to be social in larger organizations. So a top-down approach, like historically, did a lot to increase adoption and get rid of some of the fear factor. So I think we're past the stage of conversations we had earlier with like one of our early guests, Chuck Hollis, talking about like, well, so what's the kind of brand overlap and am I even allowed to be on Twitter or start a blog? And we're now to this age where you're almost expected that if you're at all relevant to a target audience that you're going to do so because you want to.
That's actually really well said, because I think it's interesting if we navel gaze a moment and look back in the Wayback files of the Geek Whisperers. It's crazy the speed at which we're moving, because I think Matt's dead on that we've moved from a place of a lot of people having fear of participating at all to the flip side. I'm hearing a lot of from people is feeling forced to participate. The forced march has begun.
Yeah, yeah. Please come to my meeting and tell us how to work on this event or this campaign and tell us what to do. I got a lot of that when I was at VMware.
Or the John, you have a large Twitter following. So what should our Twitter strategy be for the upcoming events from our brand accounts?
Exactly. Yeah.
And how are you going to personally retweet them, John?
Yeah. So we'll get into some of that. I agree. I think social we definitely are now in a multi-touch strategy. Where we're not going to go tonight is if you do talk to some consultants who used to be social media consultants, they have now become social business consultants. Uh-huh. And they go and come in, and it's smart for them, right? Because they're going to come in at a much higher level, not like an agency at a campaign level. They're going to come in and talk to senior management and say, you actually have to restructure your business because social is going to touch every part of that. And I kind of half believe that, and I kind of half think that's bullshit.
Well, let's not show that hand just yet. Let's get into it. So what does it mean for ambassadorship or whatever that means?
Yeah, yeah. So let's not – I'm going to stay away from the social business. Let's reorganize your whole digital marketing, da-da-da. Let's talk about the ways people normally just think about people and social in the enterprise, in the corporation, right? In 2014, the end of 2014, as we are recording this, there is one piece that's pretty popular, as you just said, Matt, which is these ambassador programs. And that is kind of a catch-all term that's not always used universally. But basically what these are, there's four or five vendors that are primary that I see, probably more, but there's four or five ones in maybe the top tier that come in and say, we will set up a program where that we will provide information to your employees, and then they will be given some sort of software that will make them easier to relay this information to the outside world. And you should get all your employees up on this, and then they will they will tweet about it. Now there's kind of good scenarios and bad scenarios around that. But did I describe ambassador programs well?
I think there's two sides though. I would say you're definitely explaining the software driven version before. And I think there are ambassador programs where the employees are being weaponized in any number of ways, that there's some sort of incentive for them to use their personal platforms to promote company message.
Hey, but aren't the Geek Whisperers all about personal platforms promoting a company message?
Well, they're about promoting a message, but they're always anchored in this belief of sincerity and kind of personal branding. And I think the gray zone that ambassador programs bring up is, okay, so you've given this platform to enable people, but have you enabled them to be themselves and to gain value from it personally and professionally? Or have you basically used them in an identity theft sort of way to just promote the exact same crap that's going to come out of your corporate channels that still no one or a small percentage of the following actually wants to see?
This is 100% Clone Wars. If I'm using a Star Wars analogy, it's clones. It's clones. That's, you know, quoting you back at you, John, I know you're just tweaking me a little bit here. It's be human, be human, be human. And my concern is, how on earth do you scale with software or with training how to be a human? You know, I actually appreciate the end objective here, to get everybody feeling engaged with the company in the best sense, right? Everybody is concerned with the outcome, but how do you teach individuality?
Yeah, and in fact, I mean, that's the nightmare scenario. When it doesn't go well, which is, I think all three of us are a little skeptical of some of these formal ambassador programs, because, again, everybody brings their own freak to these things, right? I don't know. You can't be a clone, right? You can't sit here and stuff like tweets down somebody's throat with a pipe like a goose. And anyway, I don't know. That's kind of
the foie gras of social media.
yeah, and it's just gross. Or I like the clone. Actually, I like the clone analogy better. Right? Everybody's repeating the same thing. I actually just unfollowed an executive from IBM, and I kept following him for quite a while. But all he
out of
would,
hope,
out of hope, yeah, because he looked like a real person, but he would only tweet corporate marketing messages. Right? Mm-hmm. That's the only thing he tweets. And I would every couple months I'd run across him and I'd look and I'd be like, well, maybe he's going to tweet something that like a human would say. But I finally just a couple days ago, I looked back on his tweet stream and it's just all IBM marketing messages. And I gave up. I quit. Well,
things just hit me like lightning. One is to make sure that we elucidate for our listeners the difference between, in our minds, what an ambassador program is versus an influence program, all three of which we've been culprits of creating. And the influence programs I see as enabling, giving information to people, and then removing barriers, getting out of smart technical people's way so that they can go forth and, you know, talk about what they'd like to talk about and be well informed. The ambassador programs seem much more about staying on message and scaling out as much as possible with as little effort as possible, having a low barrier to entry, and really creating that clone war sense. So the thing that strikes me, to make sure that we differentiate between those two, the second point is, I realize my horror at that kind of clone war scenario is that, you know, you're throwing a bunch of clutter in my yard. I live and die on Twitter. This is where I get my information. And all you're doing is creating a bunch more noise.
Huh. Well, I guess there's a couple ways to approach the conversation. I think the overall goal of ambassadors inside an organization is worthwhile. And that's because it's ambiguous, and I'm going to define it the way I think is actually valuable, which is, you're looking to connect with your internal influencers, people who would have a huge voice whether they were working for you or anyone else, and they're not necessarily tightly coupled to the brand in that way. But they're people that are connectors, and you want them to be informed because they will inform other people and propagate that information. There's great value to keeping them in the inner circle of the conversation. I just think it's often misappropriated with this idea of, okay, I told them, so they're going to tweet it.
Yeah.
Okay, jumping in there, totally agree with you. Then the question becomes, why don't you make those internal people who are already part of the external community part of your influence program instead of lumping them in with this kind of scaled out project you want to use. If we let's say we differentiate just for simplicity and call one influencer and one ambassador.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for the VXperts, we pulled employees into the influencer program, select ones, because they saw it as an award. They saw it as an honor. And then we used them. They didn't get the same benefits out of it, right? Because they're already on the inside. And a lot of the program benefits for the influencer program were access to inside stuff. But they loved the award, and they became kind of a de facto advisory board for our influencer program. Had I had to do it over again, I might have made them an explicit advisory board, but they were the de facto advisory board. I don't know. I love that they're in the same program.
And I have to just second that. When EMC Elect came to fruition at EMC, I made it a prerequisite that EMC internal people be considered. I did have to throttle it because the question of value of an advocacy program that is a majority internal, it became an interesting org chart challenge for you, Amy, that the closer it got to 50% of the people coming from internal, the more it wanted to be an HR conversation. And keeping employees happy and retaining them as opposed to an influencer marketing strategy. And that was a fascinating little tangent.
Hadn't even thought about that.
Interesting. And Matt, I love that you bring that up because it speaks to culturally different vendors. Again, we're a little inside baseball here, but I think it's on point that you both bring those experiences in because it may even speak to that bigger question we've got about the expectations of employees in a social age. If companies are hiring more and more people who've got that kind of DNA, you may end up with, like you said, all your influencers inside the house instead of that external influence marketer program you're looking at. It's just interesting.
You do have to build the program a little bit differently for those. I mean, like I say, those employees have a different role, but that is fascinating. You're right. If you hired them for that, then why don't you use them? I'll tell you another reason to have them together is that they're friends. They're already friends. So why would you make it us versus them? They already know each other.
Right. Don't fake don't make your own borders in between tribes that really exist. You have to just kind of curate the tribes that exist and be happy that you have some people that are part of your organization too. But that's not an easy value prop since marketing is generally seen as a demand generation oriented projects, like it's connected into finding leads. But if you can flip it on its head and focus on the content creation aspect and realize that the content created by internal influencers is nearly as important, even if other people won't agree that it's as important as external influencers, you can get enough momentum where I think you can use it as a Trojan horse for taking care of your internal advocates as well.
Yeah, I definitely agree. That brings up another point that I want to squeeze in here, which is that corporations, if they do hire people to be because of their social platform in part, or at least that's something that they're getting for free when they hire one of these people, they would be foolish to screw that up. And there are rights and responsibilities on both sides, right? And this show is not necessarily about that, but I just want to put that in there that, you know, when you pull in somebody who is an internal influencer, you know, why not give them awards and why not take advantage of what they support them? Don't just and give them some good stuff, resources or whatever. Not just ask that. Don't continually just ask favors of them.
Well said. And I think the other thing is you have to remember that that person is likely quite hireable, and so to hire. To use the unicorn analogy, to bring a unicorn in and just keep them inside a fence, you're not likely to have a happy unicorn, nor are you likely to keep them that long. So it's an interesting point that we're sort of circling around, I think, of if you don't give those folks opportunity, you don't serve anybody in that relationship.
It's
a funny contradiction. I hired you for your social aptitude and skill, but as soon as you become somebody internal, I'm going to treat you totally differently than you were ever treated externally because you're no longer valuable to me.
Yeah. That's really very interesting point. We've created our own problems here.
I think that's mostly because we haven't incorporated it into the quality programs that we're used to in marketing. I think marketing, this is highlighting more of where marketing is evolving, that it's not just an external demand gen target, and we've known that for a long time, but it's also an internally facing kumbaya, hurrah, like bring people together, because that leads to great content and that leads to happy external and internal customers. But like, there still aren't very good programs that wrap that up elegantly and measure that for success from the beginning.
Yeah, I love it too. I said I wasn't going to talk about social business, but part of that problem, Matt, is that, you know, when you have an SE who is a critical part or an important part of your content generation strategy, but he's completely, you know, over there in the org chart somewhere else, you know, that implies that our org charts, you know, that the as we've said, you know, the unicorns and org charts don't work, and that, you know, maybe you should be rethinking your social business to value the contributions of these people outside their narrow job roles. But I don't want to just talk about unicorns. People, our listeners, are probably sick of us talking about these special unicorn snowflakes. We're talking. Let's just talk about horses. We're talking about how do you expect the regular employees to act. One of the ways is through these ambassador programs, like we've talked about. The best case scenario for an ambassador program, I actually think, is not just for people to be tweeting out stuff. I actually think I've seen some of these pieces of software, and I'm focused on the software because I think a lot of times they're the desire for these things is pushed by the vendors. But the best case scenario is actually these things are internal newspapers. And it's a really good way of showing your employees what the company has been doing by the you know, all the content you push at them. And then if they choose to tweet out or Facebook or whatever some of that stuff, then that's fine. But actually, I think the value is getting them to read, you know, read 10 stories about what your company did this week.
I actually totally agree. We were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, and my mind's been on it ever since. I hadn't thought about how, I mean, certainly since my career started, you know, small, large companies, you had different way of conveying information, but the concept of the intranet and how that's evolved, you know, that was such a big deal. You know, this, you could be firewalled and then access the intranet, and then that's kind of, a lot of companies have started to use community-based software because you're essentially running parallel, very large parallel websites that serve all kinds of different needs. So what if we strip down the old, you know, has to be a programmer-based HTML model and do a WYSIWYG so people are more familiar with blog platforms and are more comfortable with self-publishing. So, you know, let's change the face of the internet, but then there's too much information. So a push model, and social is kind of a natural evolution for that.
Yeah.
And you know what? To piggyback that, Amy, I think it has to do with that we've been using the wrong tools to for basic communication. And it drives me nuts. It's actually something I'm very emphatic about these days for anyone that follows me anywhere. I really care about changing from opt-out mediums like an email blast or an IM message to however many people have to be stuck on a list, whether they care or not, to opt-in mediums like Slack and HipChat and things that allow you to kind of schedule and follow certain tags and content that is relevant to you. And I think because of that, we've left these people that are some of our greatest assets organizationally, we've left them in the dark as people that are building these social strategies that go across their brand and the corporate brand and our own brand, because we're scared of, I don't know, so many different things, the legal side, the org chart side, the, you know, what does this mean for the business side, all of that jazz.
And I just love what you said that, and it's making me laugh because I feel like I'm now old school and you're new school, because I'm like, what about even a good old platform like Twitter, where I think the very thing that people hate so much about it, that maybe challenge us on some of these things, say, you know, well, how do you make people listen? You know, how do you get people to listen on Twitter? And the joy for us is always going, you don't. Yeah, well, you're interesting. You have
stop
to
stop sucking. Yeah, then they'll be really interesting.
I'm thinking more honey.
I'm thinking of the old school, like, corporate newsletter that gets left on the kitchen counter, right?
Oh gosh,
that no one has read since 1982.
And I will say that, like, emails can be effective, and I've mocked them enough where I find this to be a hell of a a realization. I just think the way we go about email and the level of granularity we choose to share with people is uninteresting.
Email the channel is great.
I'm gonna give you a compliment there, John. Like, I read yours every week for Tech Reckoning, and I think the secret is you provide me information I want. You consolidate a vast amount of data into an interesting thing. You've added your voice, so it's not coming from a clone. So it's a trusted voice. It's added information. It's curation. And, you know, so there's the honey for me. I don't have the vinegar of, oh, my Lord, what's in this for me? You know, this is torture.
Thank you. Thank you. That's exactly the right point you should make. But
and I think Twitter, again, the thing that frustrates people so much, but why I like it is it is absolutely self-selecting. And for me, it's just a great way to get information. And the more frustrated you become that people aren't listening, the louder you get, the less attention you get in a lot of ways. So it's a very self-policing kind of medium in that way. And it becomes interesting. Obviously, we're talking about you need ways to communicate things that are internal, you know, and should stay internal versus external. But what an interesting concept if you open things up a bit so that you were using those platforms that people are already on and engaging them with the content in a way that they could hear, they could listen. And like you said, they knew it was okay to share it. It was put in the format. So you've got a social content repository that people can get from, share from, et cetera. And naturally there will be people who are curators. There are people who are sharers. I mean, you know, I guess Seth Godin years ago put all sorts of the Hive kind of model in place.
Yeah, different people get into it, right? We've all seen that. This is just a funny question. If you were in charge of an ambassador program, software kind of driven thing, would you gamify it?
Ooh.
Oh. That you're fighting dirty, John. I want to say I wouldn't, but part of me is like, oh, because you have to be so careful what behavior you incent.
Yeah.
Because I've been there in my old days of community bulletin boards, PHP. You know,
points are awesome.
I ran a barbecue site. Somehow that probably shocks no one. And, you know, I hacked some GIFs. So old. I hacked some GIFs and you had, instead of the stars or whatever, you had flames. So you can only imagine you could get up to like 5 flames and you got different levels. People loved getting those levels. Yeah. And of course the first few were very attainable. And then, you know, you had to really earn your flames.
Yeah, it's got to be logarithmic.
Yeah, we talked about Spice
when World. It comes to gamification, all right, so you're saying what aspect would be gamified?
Clicks, how many people click through your things? Usually that's the way these kind of things would be gamified, right? You share out individualized links that are tracked back to you, and you get some sort of points the more people click through your things. Can lead to very bad behavior if you had somebody that wasn't playing fair.
Yeah, no, like, it's not even
like,
worth doing.
Like if I would say like hot nude girls and I would put a link back to my blog post about, about, you know, replication and dedupe, right? Storage, some storage topic. And I would post them everywhere. I would get all the clicks.
Nowhere near as exciting as that. But on the flip side, we try to drive some, can we get people to try to be, and we said there's two paths. You either try to become more of an influencer or you find and elevate influencers, which is...
I like it.
That is something Guru Simran taught me, GS, in the community. And I've never forgotten it. And he's like, he was on an Engineers Unplugged episode where he's like, here's 3 ways that you can engage in community. And being a supporter is one that just has stuck with me ever since he said it, because it's so obvious. And I just like to bring it up because it's not so obvious. Because people, you don't always have to be the type A out there in your face person. You can be the supporter and drive incredible results. And that's internal, external, whatever. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty cool. So anyway, long story endless, one of the things we gamified was actually, as stupid as it is, clout score, because it is harder to game that system than you would think. So we rewarded people on the amount of engagement that got other people engaged.
Hmm. Well, I do just want to put an asterisk on gamification, that – there are really three core functions of it, and it's intrinsic value, extrinsic value, and a sense of surprise and delight. So it doesn't have to be connected to any specific driven action. That's really where all the choice happens, and can be quite complicated. So I think if we're rewarding to show up to an event or a meeting that's out of their normal cycle, that's out of their normal workload, very much like a management by objective gives you bonus opportunities based on money that you can achieve doing above and beyond your work. That's where gamification can be powerful and is a tool to keep in your toolkit if you're somebody who doesn't have a lot of budget but has enough time to try to build a community project.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, I think this leads us maybe to our next topic, which is one way that people do start to enable their employees to do this kind of thing is okay, we've talked about these delivery frameworks or whatever they are, but is often it's framed in terms of training. So it's framed in terms of everybody should be tweeting or everybody should be on social media. So you need some sort of social media competence. So we must therefore train everybody to be on social media. Does that work?
I think that's the first long silence that we shouldn't edit out of this podcast.
I struggle with this because part of me, this is back to my, and again, and y'all don't be mad at me. If we're talking about horses, I'm definitely out of the horse watering business. I will be happy to teach anybody the basics, because if it's fear of not understanding the basics of some of these tools, then I'll be happy to teach that to anybody. And I will be happy to sort of give a few pointers of the things that I think could serve them or ways that these tools of communication, and to Matt's point, if we treat them just like communication platforms we've used badly or well, happy to kind of engage from that point. But the idea that we're going to drive people, there are lots of people, and I respect the choice, who are adamant they don't want their work life to cross into their Facebook. They keep that personal. Or this platform is for this, or they're only comfortable on LinkedIn. I have plenty of those conversations all the time. I sort of feel like you got to avoid horse watering. You've got to put the tools out there, and you have to hire according to the kind of culture you want to create and the practices you want to drive. But I think once those people are hired and once you've got them in place, there's only so much as humans we're willing to change from our comfort zone. Mm-hmm. I think you can put those elements out there and then react accordingly.
One of the challenges with training, of course, is that it's usually implemented as one size fits all, right? Everybody has to go through this sort of basic training, which means the training is pretty stupid in the first case.
I had to take social media training, and I mean, really? And they were like, wow, you got through that really fast.
Sorry.
You think?
I don't go to classes.
We talk about technology. We talk a lot about marketing and social media, but we talk about technology. So I'm reminded of a quote I saw recently that had to do with engineers at Netflix. And the reaction from Fortune 100 CTOs was, but Netflix has superstar development team and we don't. And then the response from the presenter at the time was, Netflix hired them from you and got out of their way. Mm. I think nothing rings more truth than that statement in exactly what we're talking about, where, yes, training is powerful. It's good to make sure people are aware of what they're doing and how they're doing it. But, man, you need to just give them some tools and get out of the way.
Yeah, there is an element of command and control there that seems antithetical to what we're trying to do, which is let people be themselves on Twitter.
Yeah.
I mean, the story that goes around, and I don't know if this is a public story or not, so I won't mention the company, but I forget if it's been published or I just heard it through the grapevine, which is that a large company in our space had a very proactive and rich training program, and they spent a lot of money on it, and I'm sure they brought in agencies. I even think it's gotten awards. The executives would talk about it, and where everybody would have to go through this social media training. And later what they found, and everybody got this, you know, big stamp on their forehead, and now they were certified to tweet. But actually what they found then a couple years later after they had been doing this for a while was that it actually most of the people they gave the training to who weren't on social, it wasn't relevant to them. So they went through the training and just checked the boxes and clicked the buttons or whatever and were like, yeah, fine, thank you. You're certified. Later, when they actually went to go do it, when their job role demanded it or when some, for some reason or another, they actually went to go do social, they had no idea what they were doing because the training had been 2 years earlier and it wasn't relevant to them then. And now they hadn't, you know, when they needed help, that wasn't the help that they had been trained on to, you know, previously. So it really was just kind of a mismatch of timing too, and one size fits all.
That's a really interesting observation that, yeah, it's both, if they're going for this training, they might not be ready for it. And if they're ready for it, they might not go toward the training.
Because I think the corporate thing was everybody has to take it, right? Well, everyone's not doing it. So why does everybody have to take it now?
Yeah, no, and I don't know. I really do have sympathy as much as I rail on about the need to programatize and have things scale and have them be accessible, especially in companies of size. I genuinely have sympathy for that. But there is a point where you can't train common sense and humanity. And, it's the classic, I take it liberally from Matt about the cocktail party analogy of, you know, to brag about how you've never said anything personal on social media channels because you keep it professional is essentially saying I'm the most boring person ever at a cocktail party. And, you know, we've talked about it. It's like, don't be boring. Yeah. How do you possibly, maybe I need to set up some kind of completely tongue-in-cheek training session. I'll have you two run through it and see if I can, even if the three of us were challenged to put it together, what in the heck would it look like versus all three of us get asked on a personal one-on-one human level for tips, tricks, engagement, ideas, and then we can talk about it. We learn from each other. We learn from other people in the community. But it's a human process of learning and evolution.
Well, and there's just 53 hours of the Geek Whisperers. That could be the training.
There you go. Dig in, folks. We disagree with each other and ourselves.
I need to write some homework now.
I had to make up some training at VMware, and we came up with something, and it was like a 10-minute video or something. It was the most boring. It was excruciating to make. The product end product was it even bored us. Like, I just wanted to die.
That's our challenge. Yeah. Let's see. I might challenge us right here on the air.
Man, the only training, actually, I've only seen one like micro training piece that I actually liked, and that was the EMC caveman video. And we'll include it in the show notes. Have you guys seen that one?
Yeah, and we actually I brought up Chuck Hollis's episode, which we should link back to because that was Chuck's stance. That's the entirety of the training that was necessary.
That's the only one I ever liked. It's funny. It was well done. You spent some money on it. It was actually watchable the whole way through. So,
all right, there we go.
There we go. So training, training has to be appropriate.
Training to be waterboarded. I mean, determined.
Well, the thing about being appropriate too, it's not one size fits all. It has to be at the right time. It has to be at the appropriate level. Is that people have to know why they're doing this as part of their jobs, right? Slowly recruiters are kind of getting into it. There's some other outward facing people that are into it. Certainly technologists are into it. But for a lot of people, you know, unless you connect it to their jobs, it doesn't make any sense. I'll tell you another story. Had a person, she was in charge of a program. The program had an externally facing component. It normally would communicate via the corporate voice, the program voice, or maybe newsletters. But there was an email where people said stuff. And they screwed up once. And they got all sorts of – people started yelling at them. And I made the point to the program manager and their boss that, look, they're yelling at – and this was VMware. Most of my stories are from VMware. They're yelling at VMware because – but they know the program manager. So – if the program manager had been out there as a community manager of this program, then they would have gone straight to her and she could have mediated in a personal human way and she could have mediated some of this backlash. But instead, they're just talking about how VMware is so stupid. And her reaction was, well, that's really not my job, right? That's not my job to be a spokesperson for this program. I'm like, well, you kind of already are. You're writing the blog posts. You're the corporate Twitter for this program. Like, you kind of already are. You're just not doing it as you. And she said, wow, I have to think about that. And then now several years later, actually she is on Twitter as part of her job. And I think actually she's fulfilling that role as kind of the face of this program, of the person, not the person in charge, but the person you come to when you have problems, right? The ombudsman woman. I don't know.
Yeah. It's the whole be present. And, you know, more and more people are, I think, having roles that require them to come out from behind that mask and find themselves fulfilling it. And to sort of the point I was thinking about, a little bit tangential, but I think supports that, is I'm watching a lot of mentoring take place and sort of small group mentoring. Like you said, that ombuds man and woman kind of role of one to few training being more effective, providing access to somebody who can solve your problems. So then you're more able to learn, small group learning.
Very nice.
Yeah, and what I really like about that story, John, is that it lands at a place where the ex-coworker you were talking about is out in the public face, but she's not obligated to be the public face. She's not like the end-all be-all of part of the brand. She's a supporter of that brand.
Yep.
And there's not enough emphasis on that being a real track. I think Amy hit it best with GS's quote about being a supporter of that background, of those that are going to be the face, that are going to be the voice. And I think a lot of people in our audience and even amongst ourselves are huge fans of being that as opposed to just the face.
Yeah. I like the word ombudsperson because words are important, right? On one hand, who used to be the outward facing people? Well, you had spokespeople, but that's scary for a lot of people, A, and B, legal and PR likes to get involved if you're a spokesperson, right? I never was a spokesperson for VMware. Or you have receptionists, right? And that's super low status, right? And that no one wants to be just a receptionist. So we've got to have a word for something in the middle where you're supporting the corporation, you're representing operationally, you're part of the corporation. I kind of like ombudsman, but I don't know. Maybe there's a different word.
Oh, I think that's true. I feel like in a lot of ways it's that connector role that is so important.
Yeah. If anybody has any suggestions for that kind of word, let me know, because that's worth a couple blog posts right there. Hey, let's move on. Let's move on to talk about something else. Another thing that's come up over and over again is what should employees be doing at events, right? And we have used the analogy of an employee being on social is like an employee being at an event. It's very similar. You're not necessarily officially speaking for the company, but you're interacting with other people. The same risks and rewards are there. If you represent your company well, you know, that's good for the company. If you get drunk and barf on somebody's shoes, that reflects poorly on the company. But what about employees at events and especially supporting? I mean, we have a special interest in being supporting the socially activated events. But what should employees be doing at events to foster this, both the community and social media aspects of what we're all trying to do now when we get together?
Part of me starts with show up. I see so often people throw sponsorship money at some community-based event. Everybody wants to participate. Community-based events are the new black. And then maybe a logo goes up, and then they don't have anybody there. You know, the flip side is you could have that flooding kind of concept where you don't allow other new people in because there's so many people, sort of the established people. But truly to have nobody there to put money into it and not to show up is, I think, the crime of the century. Like, why slap your logo on it and then not meet the people who are part of it?
Hmm. Yeah, it's like hosting a house party and then just not showing up.
Just not showing up.
I mean, all the great stuff is there, and like it invisibly was orchestrated perfectly. I mean, as people that do this professionally always do. But if you don't have the right representation, it does feel a little almost awkward, if not just underselling the value to the business.
Mm. And I think some of the things this starts to scratch as we talk about who you hire and what you hire them for. It's not that you could necessarily, I mean, this is certainly a horse watering case. The worst would be if people were compelled. You must go to this event. You must go to that event. But how do we sort of train, engage, help companies understand they probably have folks who would like to attend something like that? And if they can't find that person, go themselves. You know, exactly what you're saying, John, with the story you were telling, if fill the role, you know, if the gap exists, fill the role, go yourself, engage.
Let me pull this apart for just a sec. First of all, Amy, do people know what you mean by horse watering?
But the concept of you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. I really am very firmly convinced now that you can only ask people to do something. And if they're truly adamantly against it, then the idea of enforcing somehow through policy, you three engineers must go to this whatever tweet up. What a nightmare, right? Yeah, will either sit with each other, not go at all, leave early, be completely sullen. I don't even know that how you could construct a job description that would force someone to do something like that. I can't even imagine.
Right.
So it has to be voluntary.
If they're not jazzed about it, don't even bother. Yeah.
Right. And it is after hours. Typically it is on top of everything else you do. It's definitely in addition to.
And the other thing is, I think if people have been following, they know exactly what we're talking about, but let me see if I can break this down again. The naive, we'll say the HR and event people, when they think of social media at events, they would think of, you're tweeting, right? This is all online stuff. Are you supporting the show by tweeting out the headlines and announcements and the fact that we're giving away an iPad in 10 minutes, you know, that sort of thing. What we're actually talking about is we're actually at events to connect with the people that we talk to online. And that's why we're there. And so there are now quite a few events, sub-events in the bigger conferences where companies will sponsor it, will sponsor these events, and they're generally parties or whatever.
And to be fair, they've got group things, so it's not like sometimes they throw their own events. I've seen vendors throw their own events and not really send representation, but oftentimes they're jointly sponsored. So it's kind of a third party, bunch of sponsors get together. And then, you know, maybe sponsor A sends 20 people and sponsor B sends 0 people, but yet there's 200 attendees.
Yeah. And sometimes you get the people who went to the party, right? So sometimes there's a little bit of a demand. There's a lead gen sort of aspect to it. Most of the time, it's just branding and goodwill. And kudos to everybody that's seen that having a community presence makes a difference for them. They think it does. So that's welcome the support. But it is weird that you've then gathered all these people who are customers and partners in a place where they're being social and getting to know each other better. And then, like you say, then nobody from the actual sponsor company shows up. It just seems like they're missing a lot of the value.
Well, it's the gap, right? It's the right now that's measured purely in check boxes. Did the event happen? Did enough people show up? Check. We win. Game over. And it's not seen as an activity that really the event is a catalyst for something that's much larger, which is audience acquisition or a larger visible strategy that I think is rooted in this idea that's pre-demand gen and it's focused on just getting eyes on the conversation related to a business.
But I think a lot of the challenge, though, is if I'm on booth staff. Now, there are many different kinds of events, right? There are small events, large events, regional events, you know, day-long events, multi-day events. So we're kind of generalizing here. But if I am booth staff at an event, is it my job to then go to some third person party and whoop it up? Is that part of my job description?
I know. And that's where we get into I think it has to be hiring so that you get people who welcome the opportunity. Oftentimes what I do at a show involves shooting video at the booth. I think it's my responsibility when I'm in the confines of that booth I'm on booth duty. In some broad sense of that word, right? So if a customer comes up and has a question, I have an obligation to help them out. I work for Cisco. I'm inside the booth. It's an interesting conundrum. So, you know, I certainly fill that pull. I think most people would if they were inside the four walls. They understand you're representing the company. The flip side becomes, how do you incent that behavior? Or is it purely a hiring practice? I'm sort of advocating that it is. It's a hiring practice to take people on that are interested in engaging the community in that way. And if you're the person sort of paying that bill or engaged, then go to the event yourself. Don't think of it as something where you write a check and don't engage.
Yeah. This is really a whole other podcast, because I think what we're saying is that the modern event, whatever it is, user groups or conferences or whatever, vendors or the people putting on these events are actually leaving a lot of value on the table because they're engaging in kind of old-fashioned trade show ways, when in fact there's a lot of actually very sophisticated and very interesting and very multi-level things going on at this event that you can now take advantage of in different ways that you couldn't if this was 1950 and it was a, in, you know, this was a trade show and we were just, there's some different values that can be extracted. Oh, that sounds terrible, doesn't it? Different values that can be extracted from it. There are different ways that for you to interact with the people because we have a different set of relationships now that everything is social, that if you just set up the booth and go there from 9 to 5 and leave, that you miss out on. I think that's a whole different podcast.
No, and but ties us back nicely to the beginning point. That could be perhaps chapter 2 of expectations of employees in a social age, that it has changed. It's no longer 9 to 5 and we no longer work 9 to 5. Is it any surprise that our trade shows have evolved from 9 to 5 and then go to dinner with the colleagues you flew in with?
Yeah. 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 I see it at user groups too, right? Do you go and have dinner with the attendees the day before, the day after, right? I don't know. Do you do any of that, Matt? Do you try to get there before or after? And
yeah, I definitely prefer to be there before and after an event if possible. It's not always possible. And I actually have had to make some tough decisions where I turned down an opportunity to have, three or four people from the startup all together and going out to dinner and having fun, to turn it down to go to a social event that I think might extend our audience.
Right. Well, that ties strategically. It ties into our last pod or one of the previous podcasts we did, right?
Yeah, I think there's always that tension, and we've talked about that a good bit. But it comes back to, like, I don't know, is that my job? Should I be holier than thou because I did that, or am I actually just like somehow, you know, quote unquote, punishing myself by omission from this other fun? I think you really have to trust your gut and intuition on that, and avoid being too insular.
Well, I think we've opened up a whole new vein. We're always looking for sort of new threads. And in the last few podcasts, I feel like we've opened up a new vein of we're going to have to do another round on the modern job description. How do you hire for this? How do you look for the right thing? There's a lot here. We need to get some folks on, either HR or some people who've been part of hiring practices. It could be interesting.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think... Yeah, absolutely. I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated with us. We are so fascinating. My God, why isn't everybody listening to us? We are so brilliant. Anyway, on that note, I think we probably should wrap this one up, though, talking about employees, what their responsibilities and rights are for social media, the way companies should be thinking about them. Anyway, and call it a day. This has been another week of the Geek Whisperers. We've had a good time. I hope you have too. You can catch us, you know where all the places you can catch us. I'll talk about it in just a second on the bumper. But if you want to give us a rating on iTunes or Stitcher or someplace like that, it actually helps us a lot. Or share us with your friends if you found something that we did insightful. Thanks again. We'll see you all next time.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
Matt, Amy, any final words?
No.
I think we should wrap it up then. Amy?
I'm out of words for once. Okay.